Welcome, everybody. My name's Nick Thomas. I'm the finance reporter for Marijuana Business Daily. I'm here at the conference with Mark Grindeland, the co-founder of Coda Signature. Mark, who's been on a panel this morning here at the conference, just tell us a little bit about your company and how it all started.
Sure. Good morning, Nick. So Coda Signature, we started the company, incorporated it in January of 2015. We are a premium infused products manufacturer. We manufacture very high-end edibles, also topicals, as well as concentrates. We launched in Colorado, shipped our first product out the door in the second quarter of 2016. Today, our products are sold in Colorado in about 620 dispensaries. We have just over 20% market share of the infused edibles adult category for chocolates.
And I think we were talking earlier, you also mentioned about, you know, expansion plans. You might move into Canada.
Yes, we're over probably the last 6 months, we've been engaged in a number of conversations with some of the largest Canadian LPs to bring Coda Signature to the Canadian marketplace, as well as potentially make products for their brands, and then potentially use that partnership as a path for one of the Canadian LPs to come into the United States upon legalization here.
All right. Well, we've heard a lot about brands during these last few days. How competitive is that space, and what can you do to compete in that space?
Great question. Very competitive space. You know, what was interesting when my co-founder, Elizabeth Cook, came to me in the summer of 2014, she'd been in the industry since the very early days in Colorado. And when adult use was legalized in Colorado, she wanted to really kind of rethink and sort of think much bigger about the opportunity. So she came to me and, you know, we spent basically about 6 months really looking at the opportunity, and I'd spent about 15 years as a management consultant in another lifetime. And so I did what kind of a typical, you know, strategy consultant would do. I looked at sort of the ecosystem. We looked at the value chain. And we locked in on products for a few reasons. One, we felt like on the flower side that eventually it would be cultivation. And, you know, if you think about sort of a crude metaphor, would you rather sort of grow corn or make cornflakes, much higher margin than cornflakes. On the retail side, we looked at the retail side and we felt like it's going to be really hard to differentiate retail over time. Everybody will set up beautiful new stores, but it's sort of like liquor stores. Everybody carries the same products. So how can you really differentiate? Mm. And our hypothesis at the time was that there really wasn't a national brand for infused products, nor was there really a premium position for a brand. And what we decided to do was we wanted to come out and make a premium product, but at price parity with the market to grab market share. So that was the original thesis of the business. When we started to pull the team together, we were very successful in pulling together just an unbelievable talent. Lauren Gockley, who is our head of edibles, she's a classically trained chocolatier. So we started with that, and that really sort of was the beginning of the rest of the journey. You know, I knew I had to build a really strong management team. So Lauren was fantastic in terms of recipe development, coming up with just really unique flavors. I brought on a chief operating officer a little over a year ago who came out of a third-generation confectionery family. His father started a company in Chicago in 1950, and Patrick grew up in that business, but they produce about 40 million pounds of confection a year. So on mass scale, like 300,000 square foot manufacturing facility. So bringing Patrick in to partner with Lauren has been really terrific, because what we can do is make these unbelievably good products at scale. So that's where we really were known, starting there. And, you know, we started to look at brand extensions. And if you think about luxury brands, think about Ralph Lauren. Mm-hmm. You know, Ralph Lauren started with apparel, but now he has home decoration. So he's done brand extensions, maintaining sort of the essence of the Ralph Lauren brand. And so what we wanted to do was really think about how can we take the positioning that we have and start to extend it into other infused product categories, which topicals made enormous sense for us. So the topicals that we do are really more in the luxury end of it. And, you know, to give you an example, we're rolling out a set of products later this year or early next year, which will be luxury skincare, CBD, THC. That's a $61 billion market in the United States in the non-cannabis industry. And as cannabis becomes more socially acceptable, we think the two target demographics for the topicals, first seniors wanting to get away from opiates and look at alternative forms of pain relief. But second, as you think about sort of the soccer moms who are starting to hear all about CBD and, you know, they have disposable income, we think that that is a segment of buyers for luxury topicals that's going to be, you know, a really big one in the future.
What have you gleaned from this MJ BizCon Next that you didn't know before?
This particular show, we just announced a pretty significant Series A round that we closed that was announced, I think, on Tuesday. So I've been pretty consumed with interviews and meeting with people, so I haven't had a lot of time to spend at the show. But basically, we pulled together a syndicate of really top-tier private equity firms. And so our lead investor is Granite Hall Partners out of Chicago. They've invested in MedMen, PharmaCann, HelloMD, that's some of their portfolio companies. Also, we've got Gotham Green Partners, you know, huge in the industry. I think they put in over $500 million in the last few years. So they were behind Kronos.
Yes, the original Kronos group, right. Yeah.
So Kronos, Ianthus, Flocana.
MedMen.
MedMen. So, you know, incredibly strategic, smart guys. We love them. We also brought in Salvio Capital out of
Chicago.
Right,
they're present here.
Yeah. Michael's here.
Yeah.
And then we also brought in Mazzucchelli's. So it was, I feel really lucky to pull together a team like that. I think they're very smart, understand the industry, and will help us navigate to creating what we hope to be just a world-class global company.
Well, good luck with that. One final question. One of the things that people are talking about got from Viridian yesterday was saying, you've got to have an exit strategy in this business, and the buyer is in the next room, he basically said.
Right.
So what would your ultimate plans be for this company?
You know, this is my fifth startup, and what I've learned a long time ago is when you're starting a company, you start with the end game in mind, and you engineer the company to get you to that point. So I think the likelihood for some sort of exit for us would either be an IPO on the U.S. capital markets. We're not interested in listing on the CSE. I think it's very crowded. I think there will be a few winners, but a lot of people will get stranded. I believe that, you know, once the STATE Act passes, that's going to create a pathway to the U.S. capital markets. So, you know, we want to have optionality. That's very important to us. So we will probably start the preparation for that, I would guess, probably towards the end of the year, with the anticipation of the possibility of something like that in the next 18 months after that. But in parallel, we'll also be talking to strategic acquirers. So as I think about potential companies who would acquire us, you know, it's easy to look up north and see what's happened with Canopy Growth and with Kronos, with the two major companies that have backed them.
Right.
Those companies are just waiting to come into the U.S., and I think there's a long line behind them. So I think that we could get acquired by, you know, large companies in either alcohol, tobacco, pharma, food manufacturing. You know, I think those will be the likely acquirers. It's been interesting. We've had people, you know, starting to have very cursory conversations with us. They love what we're building. But obviously they can't, you know, really get into anything substantive at this point. So our goal is to build a great company that creates great shareholder value for everyone. And I believe if we can do that, we'll have lots of options for us in the future.
Well, good luck with whatever you decide to do, Mark. Thanks very much for your insights.
Nick, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.